All over the planet, at any given moment, a magical variety of wildlife is surging around us in a flurry of fur, feathers, fins, and scales. A flying snowy owl sights her prey, screeches triumphantly, her shadow dark against the icy tundra below. Across the Serengeti, hundreds of thousands of animals chase the rains, following the annual circle of the Great Migration. This is a celebration and a reminder of the breathtaking creatures that we share our world with.
Welcome to What's Your Map? An Oculimundi exploration. I'm Jerry Broughton. In this podcast, we hear from those who live and love maps, making, preserving, interpreting, and being inspired by them. In each episode, we ask our guests to unfold a map that is special to them and to tell us the stories that lie behind it. To follow the map as we talk about it, go to oculi-mundi.com. At a time when so many of us are using digital maps, today's guest still finds meaning in drawing maps by hand. Anton Thomas is a Melbourne-based artist-cartographer whose work has been featured in the Washington Post and the New York Times. His latest map is Wild World, a sprawling, intricate, hand-drawn map which depicts a world without borders and containing over 1,600 animals. The New York Times called it inspiring and wondrous, and they're right. Anton, welcome to What's Your Map?
Great to be here. Thanks, Jerry.
And I do have the map here. You see how vast this map is. People can probably hear this. It is huge. Let's go through it in some detail because there's an enormous amount of detail here. Take me through it, Anton.
Okay, if we start in North America, up in Alaska, where I began the map, you'll see a grizzly bear with a mouthful of salmon. That's the first animal that I drew on the entire piece. Now, I talk a lot about the animals, but the landscapes are really key to understanding this map as well. For example, you'll see Yosemite Valley behind the shoulder of a California condor. We continue on into Central America, past the Quetzal, which is the national bird of Guatemala, past the Pantanal swamps, the largest wetlands in the world. So now getting into Africa, which I was pretty nervous approaching it. When it comes to a world map of animals, like Africa, not only does it have perhaps the most extraordinary wildlife on the planet, but its animals were all really big. So fitting them on the map was really tough. And then the mountains inside the Sahara really surprised me, like the Tibestes. I had no idea that there were such remarkable, dramatic mountain ranges that kind of punctuated the vast sand seas of the Sahara. Europe's a continent where wildlife is not always the first thing people think of. There are so many different countries and such a wealth of culture and history, but there is also a wonderful natural landscape.
As I'm from the UK, and I looked at the UK in these maps, and I thought this was very interesting. I love the fact that for the UK, we mainly have otters and beavers and badgers.
A badger, yes.
And then we've got puffins.
Yes. I don't even know how to summarize my experience drawing Asia. It was a huge part of the map. I mean, outside of Africa, India has some of the most astonishing megafauna, and it was a real pleasure to draw the Bengal tiger, the Asian elephant, sloth bear, the Asiatic lion, which was, you know, is only found in one little forest in Gujarat. I had a lot of fun drawing China. It's the kind of place where the map that I'm drawing most sort of diverges from reality, because here on this map, you've got panda and the Chinese crocodile and the great sturgeon of the Yangtze. But in reality, you know, cities and towns, they cover eastern China like the Milky Way. I mean, it's one of the most urbanized, heavily populated regions on Earth. We get through the wonderful birds of paradise of Papua New Guinea, and that was pretty mind-blowing. My mum grew up in Papua New Guinea, so it was cool to talk to her about some of the species I should draw there. And the first thing she said was, tree kangaroo, do it. Australia is an interesting mix because it's got all these adorable marsupials and vibrant birds, and also some of the most venomous species on Earth. One of my favorite animals on the map is the inland taipan, or the fierce snake, which I have in the outback here, and it is the most venomous snake on Earth. And then we get to Victoria, where I live, and in Melbourne I drew the grey-headed flying fox. Where I live in the suburb of Fairfield is right next to the Yarra Bend Park, and there's many, many thousands of flying foxes there, so it was kind of fun to not have to look at my computer once to get the animal. I could just go for a walk and take a photo.
I was struck by, I thought, you know, mostly you think about maps in terms of physical geography of the world or political geography. This kind of sits in between, doesn't it? Because what you're focusing on are the animals.
A lot of world maps, they sort of have nations before nature, you know. They will really focus on all of the different countries that create the checkerboard of our geopolitical earth. But in this case, I wanted to remove that and instead bring the animals to the foreground. Now, the planet has millions of species, so actually choosing which animals would make it on is crucial to understanding the map. There are three main criteria. Firstly, they're wild. So you won't find a French bulldog on there. You won't find a house cat. Secondly, they are native. And to my best attempts, there are no human-introduced species on the map. As a New Zealander, that's very important. Our country is filled with really devastating pests. And thirdly, they're all extant, so not extinct. And that last part's really key. This is a contemporary map of nature. It is set in today. And actually, it was in Europe where the criteria of wild, native, extant first emerged. I was drawing, where was I? I was in Spain, and one of the most evocative animals in Spain is the fighting bull. And I thought, okay, let's draw a bull here and whatever, that'll really capture something of Spain. And I drew it and I kept going and I kept looking back at the bull and it was just wrong. It was the only species that was from domesticated origins. It also evoked bullfighting, which felt a little off in a map that was about celebrating animals and respecting animals. So finally, I went back and I erased the bull and I had to turn its horns into part of the Cantabrian mountains and replaced it with a Cantabrian brown bear. So I just, that was where I determined, no, we're only going to have wild native species here. We're not going to get into all the domesticated possibilities.
And practically, just explain to me, how are you drawing the map and how are you building the information to create the map itself?
Sure.
Why did you start in Alaska? I'm curious for that. That's the point of origin. Why?
That's actually pretty simple. I'm right-handed and I like to move from left to right. It means, you know, your hand is...
Yeah, I get it.
Your hand is pressing on the paper, so... Yeah. I also know North American geography quite well, so I was it was an easy place for me to start.
So you just went from right to left. This is very interesting because, again, it's about orientation, isn't it? Where you start and where you end, as it were. And so then how did you move from then?
Well, the right-left thing didn't last too long because, yeah, that's not really it's not really how the world is shaped. And I did all the land first. So it was like North America, South America, Europe, Africa, Asia, Australia, and then I began the oceans. As I was moving down through North America, I, again, didn't really have a plan. I just thought, world map, no countries, animals. That's all I knew. But as I went, I was just confronted by how many species there were to choose from, and the density of species really increased, especially once I got to the Amazon, where it was like, oh my God, how can I possibly fit all these animals?
How did you do that? I mean, were you drawing on books? Were you using the internet? How were you gathering your detail around the animals and making those choices?
Online research, but really intensive. So let's say it's time to draw Mexico. I would just read everything I could, start with the Mexico Wikipedia page and just look at its geography and wildlife. So first and foremost, are there any national animals? Those are always very evocative. You know, you want to have a kiwi in New Zealand, you want to have a bald eagle in the States, you don't have to be too fancy, those are good choices. And then it would be like, yeah, just noting down what possible species I'd fit in there. Okay, we need some reptiles here, let's get a Gila monster in the Southwest. Just a real process of elimination. Like, a lot of cartography is learning a whole lot about the world and then cutting out 90% of what you learned because you can only fit this amount. I mean, a good map is readable. It's digestible. Even something as super detailed as mine, like, I still want people to be able to look at it and not just be completely overwhelmed.
Well, I mean, as kids, I mean, I'm older. I mean, we grew up with world maps and atlases, and we don't anymore. So it is an interesting power and resonance to a map like this, because I think people don't get to envisage the world in the same way. That's one of the weirdnesses, isn't it? We have maps are so ubiquitous these days. We have them on our phones and our laptops, and we use them so much. But we are losing a sense, actually, of a global interconnected world, which is, in a way, one of the things that this map shows us.
Yes, absolutely. When people look at this map, I can sometimes see them studying it, trying to place where the country borders are. It's a reflexive thing, like, isn't that da-da-da? And then realizing, oh, those are imaginary. Those actually are things that we have invented and placed on top of geography. And so here you get to see it as just one unified whole, which is the foundational layer. The foundational layer of everything is nature. And that includes us. So the sense that we are just one of many, many species on this planet is really important. And that sense of unity you get when you remove the geopolitics is, I think, super important to why this map is different and why it is appealing to people, why it has resonated.
Tell me a little bit about the process of making it, because you made very specific decisions, didn't you, I think, about the projections that you used. Just tell me about what the thinking was around that.
I'm glad you asked, because projections are a hotly debated topic, certainly within cartography, but even more broadly. And there's, you know, a lot of passions around this one. Certainly, as somebody from New Zealand, we sometimes even get left off world maps. I used the projection Natural Earth, which isn't widely used, but it's a really nice one because while it isn't exactly equal area, there is quite minimal exaggeration in the high latitudes. That enabled me to just have more space to fit my animals, to not have everything look all squished up, and for the coastlines to still be familiar. I cut the line right through the Bering Strait. So that was important as well. Maps, when they're centered on Greenwich, on 0 degrees longitude, they basically cause this tiny sliver of Siberia to be cut off, which I just find is aesthetically horrible. Between that and using Natural Earth, I thought it was just the perfect compromise. And it's always a compromise. That's the thing. Projections are, by definition, a compromise. The only truly accurate world map is a globe.
But you're sort of doing something different with that, aren't you? I mean, the example that you've got now, the projection, is a bit of a clever compromise in the midst of it. I want to ask you, as a Kiwi, why didn't you put South at the top, though?
Great question. And yeah, well, the thing is, look, by all means, I love the idea of challenging widely held conceptions. That's great. And there are cartographers who do that. But if I was to put South on top, 99% of people, every time they look at the map, they're just automatically wanting to flip it back in their head.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's not really a gymnastics that I'm that interested in doing. You know, I don't mind New Zealand being down there. It doesn't give me an issue. another thing I'll say is sometimes people say, why isn't Pacific centered either? Which also at least centers New Zealand. But I really hate the way South America and Africa look on Pacific-centered maps. It's like South America is being pulled out by a vacuum.
Well, one of the issues, isn't it, is if you do that, the top of the map is defined very much by ocean. There are certain, I mean, it's sort of what you're describing, there are certain sort of aesthetic decisions which shape that. And it leads to another issue, which is, I guess, what you're touching on, which is the kind of the emotional impact that it has. And you talk about this a lot. You talk about being interested in evoking a kind of emotional geography, and that this is clearly what the map is doing. There's an emotional power to showing the what you describe as the wild world. What is it for geography to have emotion, as you've described it, Anton?
Again, because maps and geography are focusing on places, these are not just scientific concepts that that need to be studied as such. They are the very settings in which our lives play out. That's one of the reasons maps are so resonant with people, especially when they're, emotionally effective maps, because places are part of all of us. We all come from somewhere. We've all been to places that really meant something to us, or dream of going to somewhere one day that is inspiring. You just can't really separate place from the person. I'm from the South Island of New Zealand, and the Southern Alps are just in my soul. I mean, I cannot get away from them. Every time I go back home, I see those mountains, and it is like I am, having communion with the divine. Like it's where I'm from, and I feel part of that. So I think that's where the emotionally effective nature of geography and maps really play out for me, is that they actually do matter to all of us. And it's not just what they feel like, it's actually how they shape us.
Before we continue, I just wanted to say that I'm so pleased you're able to join me on my journey into the world of maps, their stories, and the people who love them. If you're enjoying our podcast and don't want to miss a future episode, then please do consider subscribing and leaving a review when you finish listening. And if you think your friends and family might be missing out, why not ask them to give us a listen too? Back to the rest of the episode. This is something about the way in which you're very carefully and artistically hand-drawing the maps. I mean, this is unusual, isn't it? At a point where we tend to think, and I think you've said it somewhere, you know, maps as we know them traditionally are to some extent dead. We've moved online so profoundly that it's rather beautiful to see what you've done here with the hand-drawn wild world map. And there is an emotional connection to that. I think you say somewhere else, my maps are a love letter to reality. And there's a way in which, I guess, the online digital map has, we might say, lost a sense of that romance, that connection to place, as you're describing it.
Because now most people's experience with a map is to type an address into Google Maps and press go, which is a wonderful function that I use as well. I think it's lost, people have lost that natural experience that used to happen where you would pull up a road atlas or you'd be studying a map to figure out where to go. But the thing is, just because the functional need has changed does not mean that people don't still get something out of maps. You know, one thing that's happened in the last 20 years since this technology has changed is there's a lot more demand now for beautiful wall maps. So it's opened up space for artists like me to really get in there and tackle it from a different direction. People still want to learn about geography, but it turns out that the figuring out how to get from A to B was not the only reason people enjoyed maps in the past. So that reason is still extant, even if the other reason is more or less gone.
I mean, I think it's always fascinating when you talk to map historians, and some things that we always say is that it's actually in the wider span of human history, it's relatively recent that maps are being used to get from one place to another. They're about so many other things. And I'm intrigued at the way in which you think as an artist who works in maps, is there a need that these maps are now filling precisely at the moment where maps do go online?
I don't think that the modern technology is completely devoid of value in exploring the beauty of place. Like I, for one, I always have satellite view on my Google Maps, but I am always in there checking things out, having a look at the beautiful satellite imagery. I remember when I was in my early teens and Google Earth first came online, this would be, I don't know, 2005, I think. And it was like, it was what I'd always dreamed of as a kid to have that. And it made me a way better cartographer. So I'm all for those resources. For one thing, they've allowed me to make the maps that I do. So there's an idea sometimes that once technology replaces an old technology, anybody who was working in that old space no longer has anywhere to go. But it's not necessarily the case. For me, drawing Wild World was a vast amount of research. I mean, 30, 40% of the labor was just research. And I could do that on my computer with, if it was the 90s, I'd be going to the library every other day with a trolley to get all the books I needed to learn about all these different species. And of course, the maps were there for me as well. So I'm all for the progress. I just like to see it imbued with more meaning.
Take me back and tell me the genesis of the map, because I know that you started it in 2020 during the pandemic, which in itself is a very interesting moment in terms of setting up a project like this. But take me further back. What was the impetus in your earlier life and your, you know, the beginning of your career to make this map? What's the story there?
I've been drawing maps since I was a little kid. I mean, there are, my mum still has a lot of these old illustrations. There's a map of New Zealand. I would have been about 4 or 5.
This is here, isn't it? This is in the animal guide. Is this you?
That's right.
It's a wonderful map. Wild New Zealand map drawn around age 5. Good old mum for keeping hold of that.
Oh yeah, I'm grateful for that. I don't know what exactly began it. There was a point in my early childhood where I just became obsessed with maps. And, you know, the South Island has a remarkable geography. So I think that was part of it. I would look outside my window and just see these mountains and these coastlines and be really blown away. And I sort of thought, for all the fantasy works out there of these fictional worlds with their wonderful maps, such as Middle Earth, for example, the real world is far more dramatic and terrifying and beautiful and complicated than anything that any one fantasy author could conjure up. So I just was always drawn to drawing maps of the real world as if it was a piece of fantasy art. And yeah, I dialed into that as a kid. I always loved animals as well, and they helped me understand where I was.
But you chose a map. That's interesting, because you describe yourself as an artist cartographer, and I wonder how the art works in relation to the kind of science of mapping. I mean, again, we've known this throughout the long history of map making. It's always been a weird connection of artistic brilliance with scientific innovation, words with pictures. That's what I think always fascinates so many of us about maps, because they bring all those things together. So I'm interested in terms of how your brain is wired. You went down that road, not as it were of what you might call fine art or even more applied art, but you chose maps. What generated that, do you think?
You're absolutely right. That merging between science and art is such a beautiful part of cartography, and I was drawn to that immediately. I think in part because, well, it's nonfiction art, for one thing. So I'm not necessarily having to always rely on the fickle nature of the sort of artistic inspiration, which can come and go. I'm a musician as well. I love to write songs, but it's like, I can't just sit down and be like, I'm going to write a song today. It's either there or it's not. And sometimes it could be not there for long periods. But when it came to the maps, I always knew what time it was, you know. If I'm drawing Borneo, well, that's where I am today. And then next up, it'll be Java. It was like, it was less, it feels less like I'm creating something out of whole cloth, and more like I am a stylus working its way through the grooves of a record, you know. Now, I'm interpreting it my own way, of course, but the information's already there. And that's something I love about it. That's where the art and the science are just so much fun, you know.
How has it changed your sense of the animal kingdom and that sense of wildness? Because as you're going further and further into the map and there's more detail, presumably it's also changing your approach to that animal life.
It was a very strange experience drawing this map. Sometimes I don't even know what to think about it. I look back at it and just go, how did this happen? How did 3 years of my life become commandeered by this almost magic spell? It felt like I was being driven by something to do it. And I was constantly surprised by it. And one of the most beautiful experiences was to feel a connection to other species, to see the world as a unified whole, with one very important species missing, Homo sapiens. But to realize that we are, all these animals are, if you zoom out far enough, they're our family. I mean, they are our neighbors, they are our cohabitants on this planet. And so, and they are just, they are emergent from the natural environments that I'm so interested in, that sense of place, they evoke it. So I think it certainly made me love animals a lot more and feel really, really happy that a map like this could hopefully inspire next generations to consider them a little more, to think more environmentally. That was very, very important.
And how has it been taken up? What have the responses been? And I guess, where are you hoping for the map to develop and land with people? Are you aiming it perhaps more for a younger generation? Are you talking to environmental groups? How is it emerging and developing as a piece?
Yeah, it's been really well received. There has been a lot of interest from people who focus on conservation, which is super exciting to me to know that. I mean, there's a map has gone to Antarctica. There's a map in the Amazon. There are map. This map is with people who focus on anti-poaching efforts. So that's just wonderful to feel like it's got any kind of purchase. There is really satisfying. And also children, that's wonderful. I mean, it's been so popular with parents and grandparents getting it for their kids. I get so many photos and videos of people saying, showing me their five-year-old just pointing out all the animals that they know, or holding up their toy orca and then pointing at the orca on the map. And it's really cool, because one of the reasons I love animals and maps is because I was getting into it as a little kid, and I would have loved a map like this. I mean, fundamentally, that's kind of why I drew it. It's so damn fun. Like, I could just do it all day. Felt like I was a kid again.
So where do you go next, Anton? Do you go bigger? Do you go smaller? Do you go on to a larger scale? I understand that you're working on a map of Kenya, but so what's the future post this map?
Yeah. Smaller. Oh, I can answer straight away, because 3 years was just such an ordeal, and I wouldn't take it back for a second, but it was a massive thing to undertake. So yeah, last year, after finishing Wild World, I decided to take a trip to Kenya, because when drawing this world map of animals, one of the most remarkable places, of course, was East Africa. I mean, I just was absolutely unbelievable what I was learning about the wildlife there, just the scale of it and the gravity of it all. So I decided to celebrate with this trip to Kenya, and it was more mind-blowing than anything I could have imagined, and I saw some really astonishing things that really shook me to my core. So I thought, okay, good. I'm going to now take it a bit more local here, choose an interesting geography, continue to focus on wildlife. So this map of Kenya, it's still primarily about the animals, and there are many species to choose from there. But I'm bringing in a little bit of the human geography again, the major cities. I'm doing their little skylines just to make it a bit more relatable to us Homo sapiens. And it's just a new pattern. So I think this map should take about 6 months or so, which is pretty small for me.
Well, Anton, very good luck with that. Thank you so much for bringing Wild World in. It's a beautiful, beautiful map of a world that we need to hold on to. And it's just a pleasure to see it. And thank you so much for joining me on What's Your Map. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Jerry. Great to speak with you.
Thank you so much for listening. I'm Jerry Broughton. This has been an Oculi Mundi exploration. The producer is Jill Achineku, and it's a Whistledown production. Oculi Mundi is the online home of the Sunderland collection of antique maps and atlases. You can read more about the Sunderland collection and send us suggestions for future maps to explore at oculi-mundi.com.